Word of mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Politicians and pundits frequently proclaim that they know what drives innovation and economic development, despite their assurances the chicken and egg question of whether quality education creates thriving economies or flourishing economies create good schools has been cycling around for years. For clues, Jordan Weissman, associate editor at The Atlantic, looked not to India's booming IT industry or China's cadre of engineers, but to Germany, circa 1386, when a papal schism opened up new opportunities. He wrote about the Silicon Valley of the 14th century for this month's Atlantic. Jordan Weissman, great to have you on the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell us about the study that opened up your retroeconomic investigation.
Well, it was it's a recent working paper that came out of a pair of researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, and the University of Munich. And it just kind of caught my attention because we do always talk about, you know, what role does education play in kind of fueling economic growth? And they were looking at the High Middle Ages, which is sort of this period where capitalism was really invented, where we first started getting the elements of a market economy. And it's also just happens to be the period of time where, you know, Europe's great universities were established. And so when you talk about this chicken and the egg thing, it's was it the markets creating the environment where you could establish these universities, or was it what people were learning in these schools that, you know, helped create capitalism? And these two researchers, Noam Eucktman and David Cantoni, they picked Germany specifically because of this kind of quirk in the country's history. And I shouldn't really say country. It's what we now think of, the territories we now think of as modern-day Germany. And what happened was, for a long time, German students had to kind of go abroad to get educated. There were no real universities in that region of region of Europe. But because of this event called the Great Schism, which is basically there were these rival popes, one in Avignon, France, where there had been essentially the papacy had been based for several generations at that point, and then one who was proclaimed in Rome, which is now where we think of the seat of the Catholic Church. And they became these rival factions. And, you know, all across Europe, different, you know, lords, whatnot, they had to proclaim their loyalty to one side or the other. And Germany, they basically picked the Roman faction. Unfortunately, a lot of German students went to school in France, and so they were all kicked out. And as a result, Germany had to start building schools. And so there's this clear demarcation, this point where Germany has to start building its universities, where these two researchers could begin looking at what is the effect going to be.
And your article has graphs charting out how many cities were granted the official right to establish markets, you know, by local emperors or local lords before and after this schism, before and after Germany started building colleges. So what did they show?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, it's what you see is and what these researchers found is that the rate at which market privileges were being granted was actually in decline until you start getting the first universities being built in 1386. And then afterwards, the rate picks up. And also what you see is the closer that a town or a small city really became to a university, the more it got an increase in the growth of markets, the greater an increase that happened. And at the same time, you know, that leads to the question, well, were they just building universities in areas that had a hot economy? And so what the researchers did is they looked at towns a little farther away. And they saw that even though the increases in market privilege, you know, the growth in markets wasn't as impressive as it was really close to the universities, it was still happening. Mm. So it seemed like there were these kind of benefits that were, you know, reverberating all around these German territories.
And as you point out, the universities produced lawyers. So why are lawyers the key to successful business development?
And that's what I thought was really interesting because, and you know, you talk about universities producing technology today, and that's what fuels, you know, fuels our economy. Well, you know, back in the Middle Ages, law was itself sort of a technology. They didn't, you know, markets in that part of Europe at the time, they weren't very advanced. They didn't really have sort of standard rules. It wasn't sort of, they weren't very efficient. What the universities taught was Roman law. As opposed to sort of traditional law. And Roman law had this amazing emphasis on, you know, contracts, on property rights. It was standardized. Everyone through Europe knew it. If you wanted to trade in Italy, if you wanted to trade up in, you know, the northern territories, Roman law was sort of a lingua franca. And so that helped these markets expand by standardizing. And Roman, you know, a lot of these lawyers, these legal scholars really, went to work in kind of public administration. And so the way I put it in my article is it's as if they were sort of reprogramming the economy with this new technology of Roman law.
So this is nearly a century after the end of the Crusades, which also opened up a lot of trade routes and business, an era of peace, really, to develop economies, and the century during the bubonic plague, and, of course, a few hundred years before Shakespeare wrote, "The first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers." They were the business innovators. So, you know, lawyers, are they the were they the 14th century equivalent of, you know, technology entrepreneurs?
In a way, I mean, not entirely, because, I mean, obviously there are people who are, you know, literally inventors at this point. But when it comes to thinking about new business models, or, you know, when it comes to rethinking the way an economy worked, yeah, in a way, by introducing law that is, at least according to, you know, in the researchers in this paper and, you know, kind of what I read on my own, it seems like that was a role they played. And now, can you really isolate any single variable as, you know, the absolute cause between economic expansion? No, I mean, there are going to be, you know, any number of factors at play. But it's still by kind of isolating, by finding a way to isolate the variable, you know, the variables and kind of control for them, I think that this is one really interesting example of looking at the way education can influence an economy in a very elemental way, just at its very earliest stages.
Well, Jordan Weissman, I want to thank you so much for the history lesson and opening our eyes a bit.
Thank you for having me.
Jordan Weissman, associate editor at The Atlantic. You'll find a link to his article, "The Silicon Valley of the 14th Century, What the U.S. Can Learn from 1386 Germany." Also a link to the study from the UC Berkeley and University of Munich that inspired his inquiry. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Links are also on our Facebook page, Word of Mouth Radio, and on Twitter, at Word of Mouth. Coming up, wealth counseling for the 1%. Banks and brokerage firms offer an emotional touch to financial management. It's when Word of Mouth continues after this break.